Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 65. And again, we've said this a few times this year, mate, but it's good to be back after a small hiatus, I suppose. But this time it wasn't self-inflicted. It was things out of our control, wasn't it?
It was. This is the long-awaited episode 65,
yeah, it is.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
As people who have been reading our updates posts would know, the laptop that we use for the bulk of our recording died, which was my work laptop.
Yep.
So a new hard drive was needed, Adam, and the new hard drive has arrived. And luckily, I was able to back up most things, all our templates, and we're ready to go again, but it was looking a bit shaky for a while there.
It was. We tried to do one a fortnight ago, didn't we, where I sort of recorded a bit and sent it off to you because you were away at a conference. We'll talk about that later. And we kind of actually, tonight we sat down and said we're kind of thankful that episode didn't get out there because we don't think it was necessarily our best work. Because I was sitting in my bedroom recording this on my own, and it was a 10-minute recording, and I was just doing it sitting there talking to myself but pretending you were almost there, and it was... It's probably the weirdest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, me too. And I was in an apartment in Melbourne trying to record on my own and respond to you. Mm. It's interesting. I'm sure there's lots of listeners, particularly Victorian teachers and Australian teachers, who have had the old laptop crash, Adam, I'm sure. Mm. And when it happened, when I got back to school, it's amazing how many people start talking about, it's because it's the laptop that's supplied by the department, and gee, that didn't last long, and all those sorts of things.
Yes.
The first time I think it's actually happened in my career. So to me, it's just bad luck.
It is bad luck. Well, I mean, what can you do about it? I mean, I know you, and I have to say that I don't know if you're going to talk about it later in the conference when we talk about that, but it actually crashed for you the first morning of that conference a couple of weeks ago. You literally didn't. You opened it up, and it just crashed.
Just prior to presenting.
Yeah.
I spent most of the keynote presentation trying to restart and just trying to get... Because I needed an internet connection. I needed to be able to access the internet.
Unbelievable.
It was tough. And, you know, Adam, I must admit, over the over our seasons of the podcast, mm-hmm. since we began in 2014, I stand here and say that it's me, mm-hmm. has been a little bit facetious about the technicians that are employed by... many government schools in Victoria.
The word I'd use, but anyway, we'll go with it.
Well, I'm going to go and say that, come out and say that the support I got over this hard drive crash was fantastic. They were emailing me, replying to my emails immediately when I was at the conference, and got onto the problem. So, Adam, kudos to those two blokes. They know who they are.
Good on them. Now, before we do get started tonight, last week we weren't able to have an episode last week because... you were away on camp, mate, with the grade threes, and camps always, I mean, we've spoken about many camps before, but this one, generally compared to some of the other ones where you've had to spend time in a hospital and do a lot of those things, this one not too bad?
Yeah, it was not eventful in terms of those things, Adam, and we've talked about this before, but term three, it's not the quiet term at all, Adam. We've just talked about conferences, we've talked about camp. I know you've got a PDP, a rather late PDP coming up soon.
Yep.
All sorts of things. It's not school concerts for some people. It's,
all those sorts of things.
Everything gets put in term three because that's the quiet term.
It is. And because people see term one, you can't fit anything in there. Term two's reports, term four's reports. Yeah. Let's shove everything into term three where everyone's going to be
and
okay.
You've got book week we had the other week. You've got literacy and numeracy week.
National Footy Colours Day. You've got
Footy Colours Day.
Like just so many things that you could go on with.
It's not the quiet term, it's the cram term.
It is the cram term. But I'm glad you made it back from camp in one piece, mate, and we're really excited to be back here for episode 65 and to get stuck in. We've been looking forward to this for a while. So, mate, let's not waste any more time. Let's get started.
Sure. Well, Adam, for the first topic, we finally get to touch on an article that we shared on our Facebook page. Well, it's getting close to a month ago now, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And a lot of people may remember it. And the title of the... it was a comment in The Age on August 13th, A Weary Teacher's Most Spirited Lesson. And the article was written by Julia Baird, but it was based on a teacher called Gabby Stroud, who she saw speak at a writers' festival in Byron Bay in New South Wales not too long ago. And Gabby has left teaching. She's about my age. I think she's 38 years old, so just a little bit older. And it was about her burnout as a teacher, as a young teacher. I did a bit of searching, Adam, and found Gabby's original essay that she'd written for the Griffith Review about her experience with teaching. And this Julia Baird was saying how disappointing and sad it was to see someone at this stage, you know, leaving teaching. Someone who, after Julia heard her speak, saying, I think she said, a vivacious, passionate young woman. Mm. She said, a woman who I I'm really sad for that's not in the teaching profession anymore. Kids need people like her.
Yeah.
And so we did a bit of delving, didn't we, to see what it was that Gabby was feeling about the job. Yeah. And there was lots, wasn't there?
There was. And if I could talk about it for a second, in the sense that there was a quote that really stood out to me. And I think it really stands out to me in the way that teaching's going at the moment. And the quote was, and it was in her essay, she wrote that, apparently, I'm more valuable as an assessor, an examiner, a data collector. I've had to dull my once engaging lesson sequences. Now I must begin by planning the assessment, consider how students will show what they've learned, and predetermine what they're going to learn. It is mechanical and rigid and driven. Now, I think there would be a lot of teachers out there, particularly in the primary sector, that would ring so true. You'd be sitting there going, that's exactly what I do. Every time we do lessons, every time we go to do new things, we have to pre-assess first, and then we've got to do, you know, all these other assessments. But when you're doing those assessments, you're still expected to be doing all these other aspects of teaching that you're then going, but I can't do that aspect of teaching because you're asking me to do this assessment. And to get this assessment done,
yeah,
I need to forego all these other things that I want to do, because otherwise I'm going to run out of time, and then you're going to look at me and go, why didn't you get your assessment done?
Yeah.
It's a quote to me that really stands out about where teaching is going, where it's headed, and I think it's disappointing in a lot of ways, but again, it rings true.
Well, she lists lots of things, initiatives, for want of a better term, that she's endured, such as the A to E reporting, which we've touched on before, NAPLAN, the MySchool website, and the professional standards for teachers, quality teaching frameworks, national curriculum, all that sort of stuff. My question would be, and I'm going to jump onto the other side here, is what kind of environment was she working in terms of her school and their culture? Because I think you're absolutely right, and she is absolutely right, that we are under pressure to provide results. We're under pressure to assess. And you're right, time-consuming. I mean, you and I were just talking off air about the assessments that we're trying to do in reading at the moment, just in this term, even though it's not an assessment term. But I do wonder about the leadership she's got around her, because I know that in our school environment, a lot of people do feel under pressure about what they have to achieve, but they also have been told by leadership, and I've been told this at times this year, that we do have the freedom, as long as we're meeting that target, you have the freedom to implement it any way you want. Use your professional, you know, knowledge, I guess. Now, there are some things where you kind of get, a curriculum coach might say, try this, you know. But I think we have that freedom. However, I think what we're lacking, I know what I have lacked a bit this year, is maybe how to feel that freedom to do it. I don't know how else better to describe that, to actually say, right, I'm just going to do this for the enjoyment, for the kids, for the engagement, and the outcome will come no matter what.
Do you think that freedom has been taken away? I think that freedom has been taken away in a lot of ways because of the assessment. And I think, like you saying there, you know, I just want to go with this, I just want to do this. But you almost feel in the back of your mind going, what if someone comes in and sees me going, you're not supposed to be doing that. We're currently meant to be doing this. Oh, how are you assessing that? So when you did that lesson, what did you get out of it, and how can you show it? Well, not every lesson to me has to go that way. I mean, you can see how the kids get things out of it and where they can go with it. But while there is the freedom to teach, and clearly, Gabby obviously didn't have that freedom. Clearly, she used the word rigid. And to me, the word rigid means that what she was given to do was basically, this is what you're going to teach, this is when you're going to teach it, and you're not allowed to deviate from that path. And obviously, she may have seen other teachers slightly deviate from that and get into some trouble, you know, be told off and that sort of stuff. And I don't think that's any way to run a school. I think that's up to leadership to shield teachers from some of that bureaucracy and some of that sort of stuff, and do what is necessary while giving them the freedom to also express themselves and have that creative classroom.
I know that of late, I've worked under a leadership that has done its best to shield us as staff from a lot of that, and I know that for a fact, and that to me is good leadership. I wonder whether some of the stuff you just talked about is pressure that's coming onto school leadership from above. Coming from regions, and then coming from the department, and coming from the government, because she does say, I think apparently when she posted her when Gabby posted her article, she also wrote, when she left teaching, she put a post on some of her social media. On her Facebook page, she wrote, "Teaching, good teaching, is both a science and an art." I think we've talked about that before.
Yes.
"Yet in Australia today, it's considered something purely technical and methodical that can be rationalised and weighed." Now, I agree with that, because if governments are going to keep coming in and building these professional standards for teachers, I still don't think there's any way that cannot be looked at, but a way just to measure our... Now, I think we've got to be held accountable, sure.
Absolutely. I understand
that. Yeah. So you can filter out, keep the good teachers, and filter out people who aren't good enough. But I don't think it's fair that we have to be given a professional standard. Maybe, I think you should have a professional standard, but maybe guidelines that you say you must meet this criteria, you must meet that. Do you understand what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
Where is the science and the art, and where does it? Where's the area for us to be?
I mean,
human beings and relationships and things like that.
I think that in general, and people in Australia would know this one about the PDP process. The PDP process to me only measures certain aspects of a teacher's ability. I mean, at no point to me does a PDP measure a teacher's ability to create meaningful relationships and to the engagement with the wider community and that safe learning environment and their ability to connect and all these sorts of things. It really isn't. It's, are your kids growing? Are they doing these things? Have you done all the assessments you're supposed to do? Have you ticked this off? Have you watched this teacher teach? Have you done this sort of stuff? Which, again, I'm not saying I don't agree with. I do understand that we do need to be held accountable. But I think it focuses far too much on that and not encouraging teachers to have that creative freedom. So this year's part of your PDP, I want to see, you know, you take a risk, get it there. What's something you did in your classroom that you led, that you brought in, that you did, that the kids were engaging, that you could share with the rest of the school?
Yes,
I did this lesson on writing about mysteries, and you know, we linked it to inferencing, and we did all these wonderful things. It feels like there's not that opportunity because you go, you know, I've got my PDP, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And if I start deviating from that, then I'm not going to meet that criteria, and it makes things really difficult.
It does. And to finish off, Julia Baird also mentions about how she often hasn't thought about teachers' well-being or how they might have a bit of a weary spirit when she's going in, dropping her kids off at school and things like that. Now, we're not saying woe is us and please come and help us, the community, but it's really nice to know that she's saying, you know, just that she will take another moment just to think about the teachers that teach her kids, because I think it is, sometimes it does become a bit factory-like, and we know that in today's society, we are there for the students, but we do know a lot of parents that are everything is about their student, like nothing their student can do is wrong, and that a teacher can never be right, you know, and I think that makes, that kind of attitude does make life difficult for us and can lower our morale.
It can. I want to finish with this. How long until we come full circle? So how long until we push and push and push with this until the point where we fall off the cliff and we go back in, oh, hold on, we've got to pull all this stuff back. We've got to go back to this sort of teaching. I wonder if we'll see that in our teaching lifetime, mate.
A great question.
Yeah, I mean, I really wonder if we do. So look, if you think...
A great question, Adam. It almost sounded like the first line to a lovely romantic song, a song lyric.
Oh, thank you very much.
You should work on that.
Yeah. Should we come full circle? Oh, anyway, we won't go there. So, look, if you have any comments on that, any thoughts about the article, and it was a very powerful article, and where teaching is headed today and what we can do about it, we'd love to hear from you. Well, Rick, as we said in the opening segment, in the opening intro, that a couple of weeks ago you were at a conference that you actually presented at. And then a little while back from that as well, you were at DigiCon as well, where you also got to present. You almost, I feel a little bit in your shadow over here, just a bit of a minor teaching celebrity over here. But it did sort of prompt me to wanting to talk about conferences and not just their importance, and their importance in the sense of the connections you can make. I think we spoke last year when we both were able to go to DigiCon. I was there for a day, about how it can really re-energise your teaching and re-energise your learning and that enthusiasm. But also there is the other side of it as well, that you can pay to go to a conference and do those sorts of things and get halfway through it and go, this is just absolutely terrible. This is not hitting the mark at all. And I thought, mate, I might throw it to you to talk about particularly the one you've just done. I know we have touched on DigiCon and about the conferences and that importance to you as a teacher.
Well, this year's attendances I've been rapt to be able to go and honoured. But I've kind of done it for the personal... This year, I've done it much more for my personal professional development, just needing something during the year for my professional development. And that's fine, I think. And it's been supported by my leadership, where I'm very lucky... for that, I think. It's been really nice to go and meet up with some of my personal learning network and PLN, and that's kind of what happened again at the Leading a Digital School conference a couple of weeks ago that you mentioned. Going to conferences and education-based conferences are interesting because nowadays you're really getting a mix of, particularly at this one, I mean, this was a leaders conference, but you had a mix. You had people like me, who was a classroom teacher. You had principals, you had assistant principals, and you got e-learning leaders.
They're
only people who the school provides that opportunity for that role.
Exactly.
Other teachers, lots of secondary teachers at this particular conference. But then you've got consultants coming as well. You've got people who have been out of the classroom for a long time who might work for these consultants. Yep. And there's a real mix. And I still think, and I thought this again, that maybe there's just not all the right people are going. I'm just thinking, and it's hard because this conference is quite expensive. It's a fantastic conference, Adam, but it would cost a school a lot to send a group of people there.
So when you say that, to put it back to you, when you say that maybe not all the right people are there, do you think, are you saying that in the sense that people go to conferences for the wrong reasons? Do you think there are still people out there who see a conference like that and go, I've got 2 days off?
I'm not sure. Yeah, possibly. Yeah. But people could stand here today and argue against me and say, well, you've been to a few of them the last couple of years. Why don't send someone else? But at this stage, there wasn't anyone. I was given the opportunity to apply to present. It's down my passion. It's my passion.
But you're going to present, and that's the crux of it. You actually took part in the keynote. You probably went and watched a lot of other things, but you were there to present. But I think you're talking about those people who go along, because I think it's important. If you go into those things, you got to take something back.
A lot of the messages I was getting. Yes, you're right. Yeah. You got to take something back. A lot of messages that I was getting from the keynotes and from the other presentations are things that I know, in my blood now. About education and what's value, and I thought to myself, I know this message. There's some other people who need to hear this, I was just having those questions. I do wonder as well with the clientele. I had about only five punters in my first presentation. It was straight after lunch, Adam. I'm just going to deviate here for a second. There was one bloke at the back nodding off after lunch, like their eyes were closed. People have said to me that they don't mind hearing my voice on the podcast, Adam.
Yeah. Dulcet tones.
The first part of this workshop was stand and deliver. I had to give a bit of background, and then I wanted to generate discussion. I'd put questions out there. I'd set up a platform for them to talk. This bloke was nodding off, and I saw him about three times. Yeah. And the mouth even came
out. Oh, no.
The mouth was open slightly.
No. But to me as well, this is going to sound really terrible. I don't know this bloke. I don't know what
he may be listening to the podcast.
He may be listening. He may be a print and that sort of stuff. I'm not saying this in a controversial way, but I think a lot of those e-learning things as well, you probably want to see some of that younger generation more of that are going to not only take that with them, but have got all these years of teaching ahead of them to implement it. You know, you kind of sometimes feel like that some of the old generation, of course they're welcome to go and stuff, but it's really important that they go and bring something back. That bloke sitting up the back there nodding off is doing his school a total disservice. Now, I'm saying that not in the sense that I'm not saying I'm better than him, I'm not doing those things, but to me, nodding off, and they go, what'd you get out of it? Oh, not much. Well, your school's just wasted a grand. They could have sent a young teacher who's got that motivation, enthusiasm to come back and bring in some wonderful stuff. It kind of, it had to annoy you, mate.
Well, it did a little bit. Actually, it's the first time I've ever seen that happen. It is quite unnerving to be at the front of an audience and seeing people disengage like that. Like, it is quite confronting. Yeah, it wasn't overly pleasant, but I'm able to laugh now.
Yeah.
Just to finish off, talking about demographics, the demographic of this conference was quite older, like you said, whereas DigiCon, like you suggested, there is a real changing of the guard at DigiCon, and a lot of the and they mentioned that a lot of the old timers, for want of a better term, did mention that there is a new wave of people coming through, of young teachers and educators. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So we'd love to hear your. We're going to talk about conferences again and education conferences, but if you've got any thoughts on, I guess, on education conferences and how they run, please share with us.
Right, Rick, you did happen to share with me during the week a tweet from the conference you had a couple of weeks ago about the incorporation of ICT within the classroom, and it really interested me early on, because I know that my ICT team at school that I lead and have in there, we're currently doing a scope and sequence across the school, because obviously with the addition of the new curriculum next year, digital technology, digital systems and things is quite a large part of the curriculum, and it's something that can't, I guess, ignored is not the right word, but it can't be sort of just moved into a corner and used at different times. It's something that we now need to really be reporting on and including in our learning. And it was really good, wasn't it? There were four sort of stages about technology and the pedagogy that goes with it. And it was really good.
They're the two key words. And it's funny, really, in 2016, that we're still talking about how to marry technology and pedagogy together. But that's the reality for a lot of schools. So it's a script. We'll put it on the blog, but it's a photo of a slide that was put up by Derek Wenmoth, a Kiwi educator, a bit of a guru who was a keynote speaker, and he talked about sort of four stages of integrating ICT into your curriculum. Yep. There's the addition stage, which is total, and there's four dot points in each under each subheading. But addition is kind of where you're using, like what you said, using ICT. There it is over in the corner. There's your computer lab, and it's just an add-on. And then you move through to incorporation. So ICT is a significant focus still, but it is being incorporated and used frequently.
Would you say that's one that probably many schools around Australia could at least say, look, we're at least at that stage these days?
I think many schools that have jumped on the BYOD bandwagon or the one-to-one or the just getting iPads would be either in the incorporation stage or the next one, which is the integration stage. See, integration's moving to where you want to be, where you are a little... You're still conscious of using the ICT, but it's starting to become almost unconscious. It's just used in the learning.
Yep.
Emphasis on appropriate use is integration. High connectedness. Where you want to get to, Adam, just to finish off, is the fourth box, whereas it's assimilation, where using the ICT is almost an unconscious act. It's just part of the learning. We've talked about this before. It's another tool, and it's used when needed, spontaneous, and it's got full student agency.
Yeah, the one that jumps out to me, mate, that you spoke about is in the integration section, the emphasis on appropriate use. Now, I think a lot of people would be guilty out there of having the technology and through no fault of their own, not knowing how to effectively actually use it, how to use it appropriately. There's frequent use, but it may not, it's totally different to appropriate use, isn't it? Frequent use might be, well, the kids jump on, do a bit of athletics, a little bit of literacy planet, a bit of this sort of stuff. But that appropriate use...
That's just passive, that stuff too, isn't it?
It's very passive. But the appropriate use, I think, we'll come back to. I think schools are going to be pushed more to that appropriate use when they start to get their head around the Victorian curriculum and some of those expectations and the elaborations, you know, within it, in the domains and those sorts of things. Because it has to be appropriate use now. If you're going to report on it and you're going to do it effectively, you can't just say, well, they use mathematics, well, they can log on. They need to be able to understand it and use any form of technology appropriately.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the word appropriate there because, I'm thinking of, is that just about using it safely and being safe online? I mean, I love in the assimilation column, it says the emphasis is on spontaneous use in student agency.
Yeah, okay.
Because to me, student agency is giving them that trust.
Yep.
Now, with the young students, you do have to build that in. You've got to build digital citizenship and build proper use, but you've also got to teach them how to be agents.
Mm.
And I think we're moving so much more further ahead than using things like mathletics. We're looking at, you know, using them for an actual purpose. And we've talked about this before.
Mm.
Choosing an app or some kind of process to get to the end product that you want to get to. Mm. And that's what it's all about, whether it's Explain Everything or some of those other creative apps that we've talked about. So,
yeah, look, we just wanted to talk about it, didn't we, mate? It was something we... I think we want to share that one. I think it'd be good to be able to put picture on the blog, maybe? Or
Yes, definitely. Yeah. We'll put it on the blog. And I'd like to hear from if people who are listening who have got, you know, a scope and sequence. I know you mentioned off air that your school's been working on it for ICT. And what does your school focus on for technology and pedagogy, and how is it embedded? Well, Adam, one of the joys of finally being able to sit down and get another podcast up is an anecdote, and it's your turn.
It is my turn, and I'm actually surprised I've remembered this one. There's been a lot of times where it's been my anecdote week, and I've thought of it on a Monday and gone, oh, that's an absolute ripper. I got to Thursday, can't remember it. I can't remember. Have you done that before?
Many times, Adam.
So I'm actually surprised I remember this one. And what I want to talk about is something you unwittingly touched on at the start about, and I think I might have brought up as well, about the many dress-up days that you have at school. And I want to talk about some of the things that you've dressed up in as the past. Now, we've had Book Week recently. I know for us this term, we've had Book Week. We've had Japanese Day. We've had Blue Day for Autism. Tomorrow, we've got Yellow Day for Are You Okay? Next week, we've got Footy Colours Day.
Yeah.
It all happens in there, and that's what's happened. I want to talk about the effort that you might go towards to actually dressing up for a day like Book Week. Now, Book Week for this year, I'll just quickly say mine before I... Yeah,
don't forget the school concert too, Adam. And even though that's not a day, you've got to get for the staff item, you've got to get a dress organised for that.
Exactly, and it's quite tough. And thankfully, I've had a wife who, with the baby recently, has been able to go and get things for me. This year, I went as... I actually go out of my way, particularly something like Book Week. The normal dress-up days, I just come in something I've got. But a Book Week or a Japanese Day, I actually go full tilt. I'll actually go and hire a costume, believe it or not. Mm. And this year, for Book Week, I went as Willy Wonka, complete with hat and all that sort of stuff.
Very, very timely. Valet Gene Wilder.
Well, it is, isn't it? It was a few weeks before that one. But previously, a couple of years ago, you'll appreciate this as a big fan of the books and the movies. A couple of years ago, I actually went all out and got a costume. I went as Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, complete with arrow, like an actual bow and arrow, that the arrows would shoot and stick to a wall. No one knew who I was. No one knew.
Well, that is just, he's one of Tolkien's great
exactly. The kids are going, who are you? Are you Robin Hood or something? No, I'm Aragorn. Who's that? I've come up all this effort.
Can I ask a question, Adam? Yeah. I mean, now I know you're kind of slightly lacking on top.
I am.
Did you wear a wig?
Yeah, I did.
Because if you didn't wear a wig, I would have been with the kids saying, who are you?
Yeah, I'm Aragorn's grandfather. You know, not being on top. But I want to throw it to you, mate. I know for me, Japanese Day this year, I got to go as a Cobra Kai member and that sort of stuff. Have you gone all out for one of those days before?
Yeah, I have. But I've also really toned it down as well, where, you know, it's just been one of those weeks where you're busy or you're a bit frustrated and you can't, just can't be bothered.
Don't want to give
it
time.
Which is a bit unfair for the kids. I mean, if you're teaching the younger kids, certainly you want to put in. So book week day dress up was when I was at the conference the other week, so I missed it, unfortunately.
Right. Okay,
it's funny you say Willy Wonka. I think there's been a Willy Wonka on staff every year that I've worked. Someone who goes all out and hires and did you have a purple coat?
Yeah, I had the purple coat. I had the pants and the vest and the hat and everything like that. Yeah,
I did. I've done a few sort of different characters. I have done a Lord of the Rings. I did like a Hobbit.
Today,
1 year it wasn't. It wasn't book week. It was Crazy Hair Day, Adam.
And
obviously people wear wigs.
Yeah, and another tough day for myself, mind you.
Many years ago, I'd had a busy week and I just hadn't got around to it. I was teaching 5-6, so I thought they're not going to be as excited. Mm. And I just thought, I got up that morning and I thought, I can't be bothered. So I stood in the front of the mirror, Adam, and all I did was put a bit of extra product in my hair and just really, you know, messed it around. Didn't really look that much different. Mm. Walked in and one of my colleagues who'd organised the day, it was a fundraiser, she said, have you done your crazy hair? And I said, yeah, I just messed it up a little bit. And she held my gaze for a second and just turned away back to her laptop and didn't say anything.
Really?
And I was fuming. And
Come on.
But I also felt a bit deflated because I thought, I didn't want to feel more deflated by saying, well, I just stood in front of the mirror and messed up my hair.
Sometimes you just don't have it in you.
Just leave me alone. On the crazy hair day.
On the flip side. Exactly right. On the flip side, do you get annoyed? Now, you probably won't. This is probably me and my own little foibles and problems and stuff. I get annoyed when I see teachers stick stuff on social media about book week and things, dressing up as things, as characters, who weren't originally from a book. One that gets me now, I'm probably being very technical. I saw a couple of Clark Kents with Superman on there. Now, I know he was in comics. But is that so much a book? Like, is that part of book week? Like, it's one. Like, I had kids who wanted to come dressed in Star Wars gear and go, no, there's books of Star Wars now.
There are now.
But you want to go, it started as a movie, It's not really a book.
I reckon when you and I were growing up, it was black and white with those sort of things. But I think the lines have been blurred now. I don't think we've got many legs to stand on with that art.
And I think you'd rather kids coming dressed in something than nothing at all, you know?
Absolutely. And to finish off, Adam, I don't deal well with the staff competitiveness as well.
No.
There is staff competitiveness. And Book Week, I know that they were making Book Week doors at our school, you know, the interactive doors, kids were putting stuff. And there were competitions going on. Really? Not up for it.
No. Who's got time? What's the point? No. So, look, I want to hear from people. Book Week's only just been. All of our listeners out there, can you drop us a line on Facebook? Facebook would be great. Leave us a comment over the next couple of days. What did you come dressed as this book week? Or what's been your pride and joy? What's one maybe a few years ago that you thought, I went all out and I might have won the prize? You know, we might do a parade and the kids give out a prize or something like that. I want to hear about that. So if you can jump on Facebook and tell us, that'd be great. So, mate, feels good. Episode 65, finally in the bag after the last few weeks. It's been good to sit down here. And we've got one more episode before the end of term.
Yes, Adam, I feel well oiled all of a sudden. So next week is our final episode for Term 3, as I let Adam just chuckle away there.
Great.
And we don't have a special guest, but we are putting it out there, and we are serious. If you've got an anecdote, send us the audio. Mm. If you've got a topic you want us to talk about, send us the topic.
Yeah.
You can contact us via Facebook or the blog or Twitter, wherever you like. Or if you'd like to be on and you can make the time next week when we record, get in touch with us, and we're very happy to do a Skype conversation, Adam, wouldn't we?
They've worked well in the past, so we really want to hear from people.
We'd be happy to.
Yeah, exactly. So, for me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.